Welcome to Coin Talk. I'm Aaron Lammer. I will be shortly joined by my co-host, Jay Kang. We wanted to get a show out to you quickly after this crash and then somewhat rebound. We actually are going to do an interview with our friend Doug Kim, who is a professional poker player and actor in Los Angeles, and also was holding a lot of alts as these alts came crashing down along with the price of Bitcoin under 10,000. Jay and I talked a little bit about the causes of the crash, which preview, we don't really understand. And then we talked to Doug about the nature of crashes in general and how to hodl in the face of many panic sellers all around you. CoinTalk's partner is Medium. They have all kinds of great crypto reading material at me.dm/crypto. It's a landing page for all kinds of writing that's happening all over Medium about the topic of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, which is uncoincidentally the topic of this show.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, January 18th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $11,888.
Jay, pretty intense 48 hours we've just lived through.
48, yeah.
Have you slept?
Yes, I've slept. How many times do you think that you checked Blockfolio?
I would say approximately 1,000.
You think actual 1,000?
You know, it's actually been a so for people listening, Blockfolio is both of our portfolio app of choice. I'm not actually shilling Blockfolio right now. Actually, if you don't have Blockfolio, just never download it. Maybe just keep your holdings on the desktop and don't enter this dark period. But my internet was also going in and out. Like, they've been doing work on the internet on this block. So not only was I pull refreshing it, sometimes I didn't actually have internet and it would just kind of freeze for a second. I'd be like, oh, okay, well, at least the bleeding stopped. And then the internet would turn back on and it would refresh and it would be way lower.
That sounds incredibly unpleasant and frustrating on both levels. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really check that much because I actually had a lot of work to do over the past couple of days. But I will say that every time I checked, it kept getting worse and worse. And I think around the time when it was crashing through 11,000 is when it started all just becoming very funny to me. I don't know if you know, if you like, did you reach a point where it was just sort of like humorous?
Yeah, I think that there is like a nature to the essential fakeness of this fake internet money that at a certain point, like, it's like very real, and then it becomes very, very unreal, and then it becomes kind of funny.
What side feels more real to you? Because, you know, you and I have both been in crypto for not long at all, but for long enough to have days where, like, our investment portfolio, like, goes up, like, 40%, and we're just like, haha, that's amazing. Like, does that feel more real to you than when it crashes?
Well, when it crashes, I think it maybe confirms some of our like essential suspicions about the universe, which is that it is rational.
You mean that the guy who the ex-CEO of Ripple is not actually worth $57 billion?
Yeah. It's like, it's a little bit life affirming, I think, that there is like order in this universe. But then at a certain point, it turns dark, unhumorous again. if you pause to think about it for too long. I want to have a discussion on this show. This is going to be kind of a mini show. We're not going to be talking about a diverse set of topics. We're only going to talk about probably for the most part one topic, which is this crash. This isn't our first crash. I think this is our worst crash though, right?
This is the worst crash in 2 years, I think. So yeah, it must be our worst crash. I would say that this is between you and me and this, as Parabolic Trav likes to say, this hero's journey that we're taking together.
I've got some Joseph Campbell up there on the Crypto Cave bookshelf if you want to learn more about the hero's journey.
This is the fourth crash we've been to on our hero's journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And each one's had like slightly different contours, and we bring a different self to each one because we've lived through these previous crashes.
Yeah. I feel like we're sort of leveling up, like we're playing Final Fantasy. And every time there's a boss, we have a few more boomerangs and potions and spells. But I will say that this one was like, it was a tough boss.
So I want to take us back. Biddy-doop, 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 to more innocent times. It was Monday. Me and you were taping an episode. And
yeah, and our robot said the Bitcoin price index is 14,400.
Right. Okay. And so I think the last news segment, which no one has ever heard, maybe we'll, should we throw it on the internet as a bonus segment?
Maybe we should do it when we do a like super cut of all the things that we were really wrong about.
Yeah, this one was something we were so wrong on that we actually didn't air it. So we did a segment where it was the basic premise of this segment was, when are you going to jump off the alt train? Because the Bitcoin powder keg is really starting to shake. And I think we're going to see a big run here. I may have used the number 18,000 in this discussion. Maybe. I don't totally remember. So we basically were talking about strategies around when you should get out of alts when you see a big Bitcoin run happening. Now, getting out of alts would have not been a terrible idea, but for the opposite reasons.
Yeah, I felt like we were the French and the Maginot line. You know? And we were like, they can only come from this one direction, so we'll stand over here on this side of the wall.
Yes.
And then just before we knew it, really at the time we stopped recording, they started running the other way. We're like, we have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
We're unprepared for this.
So people keep asking me, why did this crash happen? And I have no idea.
I have no idea either. Okay, I will say, since you and I are citizens of the world, meaning we spend a lot of time on Reddit and Twitter, did you see any
gentlemen of leisure?
Did you see any theory that you liked? Because I did not.
I liked, I think his name's Matthew Green. He's an academic cryptographer. And he said that CNBC had called him and had him on the show, and they asked him why he crashed. And he said, because this wouldn't have been a politic thing to say, but crypto markets are kind of irrational, and there's probably massive market manipulation happening.
Okay, I agree with Matthew Green. Who,
yeah. That doesn't fully explain the crash. Yeah. That explains the unexplainable.
That is a statement of fact that I don't think anyone reasonable.
That's a long-term thematic thing to consider as you consider these specific plot twists.
Yes, it is a house built on sand, and that there's massive market manipulation, and that might have been what was happening. I guess the thing that I was wondering is, did you see a theory about what the market manipulation was at this time that you liked?
I didn't. Ones that came to my mind were nearing the end of the CME futures. And I think it ends on the 18th.
CBOE did end, too.
CBOE did end. So generally, like if I'm thinking about like what's new that's gotten added to the mix, I know that you've brought up like that the short volume is pretty low. But if you were really trying to hit a specific short mark at a specific time, maybe that could have contributed.
Okay, let me explain why I don't like that theory. Just for people who don't know, a futures contract in Bitcoin is a little different than stocks. Basically, both sides are betting in cash and settling in cash.
Lame.
And so during the crash, the first set of CBOE futures closed. And some people thought that some big money had bought Bitcoin during the run-up and that they had put a bunch of shorts down when the futures market opened. When the futures market was settled, they pulled it out so that it would crash so that they would win both bets, right?
Yep.
The problem with that is really that, especially for CBOE, the number of short side volume was so low, right, that it makes no sense. Like, it would make no sense for, even if you had laid every single short bet on that date, you would still not profit enough where it would be where you should run the risk of pulling out your Bitcoin to crash the market to try and manipulate the market in that sort of way. The last thing I'll just say that sort of struck me before we talked to Doug, is that I thought of the conversation that we had with Nathan Park, who was the attorney who was on our last episode, about how so much of the volume going through Korea is Chinese money laundering, right?
Yes.
And so if you are holding stuff in a Bitcoin exchange or in Bitcoin, and you feel like your days of being able to hold that there before converting into cash are numbered, then you might sell.
Yeah, and another thing that Nathan brought up, I think, is that, you know, for people who are using Bitcoin, say, for money laundering, they're in a way less price sensitive. Like, they're not hodlers. they're making a transaction, and that transaction works whether the price of Bitcoin is 8,000 or 12,000. It's kind of the same transaction,
yeah,
depending on you're paying a little tax or anti-tax, depending on how it's moved while you're holding. Like, I don't know how fast these Chinese money launderers come in and out of Bitcoin. Come on the show, Chinese money launderers. We'd love to talk to you about it. But it seems like their influence on the market really can influence volume, but like their confidence or long-term like outlook is kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. And I like, if you are trying to move $500 million through a Korean exchange,
yeah,
so that you could eventually give it to Jared Kushner and invest in one of his buildings.
Allegedly.
That, yeah, allegedly. Yeah, that actually isn't necessary, allegedly, I think. You're not looking, you're not like, oh, wow, it just bounced off the cloud, and yeah, this is a great entry
like,
point.
I got wrecked, dude. Yeah,
I missed that entry point. You're not worried about that. You're just like, I have $500 million that I need to get out of this country. So do you want to give Doug a call?
Yeah, let's give so Doug Kim is a friend of ours, a friend of the show, someone who's actually been on the show before in our pre-gaming basement tapes period. And we really wanted to talk to Doug. Well, first we wanted to make sure Doug was alive.
At some point, I don't remember what it was during the crash, but I definitely texted you, I think twice, being like, do you think Doug is okay?
Yes.
Because I had looked on Facebook and there are these like 3 to 4 word posts of despair from Doug, and I was starting to worry.
Well, so Doug is probably someone who is suited to taking a massive loss or a massive gain. He is someone who's played poker at a very high level. What year was
the biggest World Series of Poker of all time, which was when Jamie Gold won.
Yeah.
Jamie Gold won $14 million. I think Doug came in 6th or 7th place, made the final table at that tournament when he was like 21, 22 years old. So
Doug was kind of one of the people who helped get us into crypto. We before we ever copied Ledger Status's bags, we were copying Doug's altcoin bags and leaning on him for advice. Want to see how he's faring as we rebound a little bit. Doug,
yeah.
How are you feeling? Emotionally, I mean.
I'm actually emotionally, I'm not that crazy right now. I mean, I today, you know, the market cap went up back to like around $600 billion from like I don't know what it was at its low. I think it was close to like 400 or 425 or something. So you're seeing signs of life. You're seeing signs of recovery. And to be honest, like even with this whole drawdown, my actual Bitcoin value didn't go down that much. And although I faced, I think I might have clocked in my first ever seven-figure loss on paper in terms of USD, which was fun. I think overall, because I didn't lose out on BTC, in a weird way, I was like, wasn't as concerned as I was back in alt winter of last year.
All right, so just for the listeners, yep, to clarify, you lost over $1 million yesterday or in the last 2 days, but your Bitcoin value stayed about the same, and so you weren't that upset after losing over $1 million in U.S. dollars.
Do you think that the whole like thinking about everything in terms of Bitcoin value was invented by someone who just lost a lot of money in U.S. dollar value? It kind of seems like that's the historical origin of it.
Yeah, because I will say that even as somebody, Aaron and I both have learned to count things in Bitcoin value, but what you just said just struck me as a little bit crazy, Doug.
I actually had a phone call with my mother yesterday in which I told her I wasn't down that much in Bitcoin value.
I said the same thing to my dad. He texted me, he was like, are you okay? And I was like, look, my BTC value is only down 4% or something like that. You're literally just lying.
So
Doug, this is something that I've always been interested in, which was that, all right, I'm proud of you for being able to say it on the show, like you were down $1 million during the crash. Like what did that feel like at the very bottom of it?
At the very bottom of it, I was kind of like, I mean, like, I guess, like, since, well, I don't want to go into the full details of my investment in case the IRS is listening right now, but I would say, like, I would rationalize it kind of like because, like, oh, okay, I'm already up X dollars anyway, and I'm still, like, above, you know, what I put in, like, initially. So it's like, all right, I'm still playing with house money, so to speak. That's kind of like how I kind of frame it a little bit. I guess
I identify with this strongly because and we were talking at the top of the show before we had you on about like why it feels kind of funny when Bitcoin is like when everything's crashing and why you can feel humor about it. And I feel like the exact line in the sand for me is it's humorous to lose profits. And then the minute it dipped past that, it would stop being funny to me.
Yeah, exactly. Was there a point where you thought it was where like you just saw this absolute wreckage and you just started laughing and you're like, this is actually kind of funny and almost cool?
I think I actually came to that point in mid July when I think I had maybe 3x'd or 4x'd my initial investment by like May of last year or something like that. And then like in July, I actually almost got to the point where I was break even. And that's when it kind of like was like, well, like, I mean, I'm actually like thinking in my head, like, I guess I'm just going to go down with the ship. They're going to have to take these fucking coins from my cold, dead hands.
You've been in crypto since the beginning of last year. Was this the worst crash that you've been through?
In terms of US dollars, I would say yes. In terms of actual percentages, I think the combination of alt winter, the first alt winter before the Bitcoin Cash even like came through, and the that was when alts and Bitcoin value was going down significantly because nobody knew what the hard fork was going to even do and if it could crash the entire system. So I think that was like more, I guess, painful, so to speak, because it was like just there was so much uncertainty as to the whole crypto market in general. This one doesn't feel as bad because I feel like a lot of it is driven by the Korea FUD and stuff that we've experienced in the past. We've experienced a ton of like China FUD in the last year, and Bitcoin's just come out all the stronger anyway, even after China pulled out its exchanges. So I guess the mentality in this drawdown is kind of like, all right, this is kind of like we went up so much in the past 2 months. This was bound to happen. Something like this is bound to happen. And, you know, corrections in crypto are a lot more violent than they are in the regular industries. Like 40, 50% drawdowns are kind of the norm. So I was kind of like, all right, this is the game we played. This is what we signed up for when we invest in crypto. I mean, we all knew it wasn't going to be a 45 degree straight line to the moon. So,
you mean a parabolic line. All right. So
yeah, exactly. Or yeah,
that's something that look, Aaron, I think that this is something that we get asked a lot from our coworkers and people that we know in our lives.
I don't have any coworkers, but yes.
Okay, well, people we know, and I have coworkers.
Jay, you're as close to a coworker as I have.
Yeah, from me. But one of the things that people have asked me over the past couple of days is like, you know, how are you handling this emotionally? Are you okay? And I think my answer to them is always just like, yeah, it's just kind of like a joke. Like it's not real money, you know. Like if the stock market crashed, I think I would be upset. If someone like stole money out of my bank account, I would be upset. But
Jay's acting all ice cold now, but I saw
No. There's a layer of unreality to all of this, right? That feels different. Is it different for you then? And I think you and I sort of have a similar background in this, not just because we're both Korean, but both because we're both degenerate. We both have degenerate gambling problems, and so like
that was already implied by sure. Korean.
Yeah, do it. Wow, Aaron, you can't say that. That's not for you to say. Doug and I can make all the Korean gambling jokes we want between one another, and we will. Doug, as a degenerate Korean gambler, like, do you think that sort of made you be able to stomach these sorts of swings a little bit better? Because I think that that's the only thing that has kept me sane through these crashes.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, I think just not only being Korean and being degenerate, but also, like, being a former, I guess, professional poker player, I think you just understand that there are going to be swings. And coming from a professional gambling background, you kind of have, you're kind of used to those kinds of swings already from just, you know, playing and experiencing it yourself. I think the average person would, like the average normie is going to see this and be like, oh my God, I got to get the fuck out of this market. And that's why you see these drawdowns, because there's all this new money in the market that's like this, at the slightest sign of like, you know, panic, they're just like snap exiting and just like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. And so that's why I think like we have this more, I guess, like measured approach to it. It's like, okay, we're looking at the long run. We're looking at like a longer time frame. We're trying to zoom out. And that's what I think, I guess.
I mean, it's ironic that the term for that kind of panic selling is basically weak hands. Like the analogy is direct poker.
Yeah.
And I remember very specifically my first crash after my first Ethereum buy. I was at a wedding in Montreal. And Ethereum, everything just went into free fall. And I was like, I had been on my like Reddit forums and I was like, you know what I'm not going to do? Panic sell. And I like panic sold like 20 minutes into it, rebought like 30 minutes into it, then panic sold again like 45 minutes into it. Jay, what's your history with panic selling?
I've panic selled almost every single crash, I think, over the past 4 months at some point. But I generally just do it quickly and then rebuy in. But I will say that one thing that I find interesting about Doug, and I think the reason why we enjoy talking to him, is because there is part of crypto that does create, it does sort of require the gambling mentality. You know, like Doug, you were talking about it, how you can stay in during these big swings because you're used to like, you know, like losing to like gut shot straights and getting stacked and having to keep your cool and not get mad and fire more money like into every single pot.
Didn't they talk about banning Bitcoin Table Talk? What's that like that like subscription?
Oh, yeah,
poker
yeah, yeah,
TV
yeah,
service?
Poker Go.
Poker
yeah.
Go was like no like this is just bad. This is just bad for like the audience. Stop talking about Bitcoin at the table.
I will say that I don't play poker that much anymore, but I have played a couple times in the past like 6 months or so, and that both times when I played, the only topic of conversation was crypto at the table.
Doug, so you yourself were actually my gateway drug to altcoin trading, which is to say, I'll admit that when I first bought in on Coinbase, I thought there was maybe like 12 coins total. I did not really know. And Jay was like, I know this poker player. He's got all kinds of crazy bags. And I was like, Jay, we got to find out what bags he's got.
Yeah.
And so Jay sent me, I believe it was a screenshot of a text you had sent him that just
Aaron
had like
is really being a cop right yeah. now
eight
and
bags
snitching on me.
On it. And I was like, I just went out and was like, how do I buy each of these? And that was kind of how I learned. So you're kind of an unusual figure sure. in me and Jay's hero journey, which is to say,
that must have been awesome because you got, I mean, like when I met you, that was like almost at the bottom of Alt Winter. So you must have experienced like,
it was great.
Megatron, like game.
Everything except yeah. metal was a good choice. Metal
yeah,
I took,
yeah, yeah.
took a hit on. I wish I could remember. We'll yeah, try and find that text for the show notes. I remember you were deep in the Decred, deep in metal. Yeah.
Waves.
I mean,
wings.
Waves. Monero.
Wings. Yeah. I mean, you're. Monero. I know you're. You're. We've already discussed on previous Basement Tapes episodes that you're in the Waves Hall of Fame, most valuable investor in Waves.
Oh,
yes. Waves. Waves. If you are hearing this in Russia, we know that the guy who you look at the bags and you're like, this bag has never moved and it's gigantic. Maybe this man is dead. He's not dead. He's actually on our podcast right now.
But I always assumed that most people who are into crypto, like, were mostly into Bitcoin and Ethereum and maybe had, like, a few, like, long shot bets on alts. You're the first person I knew who was, like, all in on alts.
like falls deep.
Like you don't have an, I believe at the time you did not own any Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I mean, like right now, I maybe have like I'd say 5% Bitcoin at the moment.
No, you've
really increased my Bitcoin holding.
Wow. So you will not yield. I mean, you're all in on alt. Have you always been all alts? Did you start at Bitcoin and get into alts, or have you been an alter from the beginning?
Oh, no. I think, like, I was a maximalist in the beginning of the year because, like, you know, like, what are these shit coins? What are, like, you know, if cryptocurrency is to succeed, it'll probably be, like, one winner take all, and why would I invest in these, like, idiot shit coins? Like, you know, Bitcoin's going to be king, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, like, I was in a group that is mostly like poker players talking about crypto and whatever. And, you know, at some point you're like, oh, fuck, I got to FOMO into this shit before like I missed the train.
Yeah.
And that kind of started around April, May of last year where I was finally like gave in. I think my first altcoin that I bought other than Monero, I had Monero from the beginning because I thought that was good investment as well. But the first one that I got was Ethereum Classic, which was like a dollar or something at the time. And I think it like rose to like $10, $15, $20. So I was like, I felt like a genius at that time, you know, like, okay, like alts are in, it's time to go ham, blah, blah, blah. I think I took a significant position in Ethereum and some other alts and stuff like that. And once you like kind of go down the rabbit hole, you're just like, I don't know. I guess it is somewhat of a degenerate activity where you just like, I just want all the altcoins now.
I feel like there's like, in terms of degenning, so, it's like a pyramid where it's like, you know, people who have like bonds think the stock market is degenning. People in the stock market think like crypto is degenning. Within crypto, people who like think Bitcoin is conservative, but altcoins are degenning. And then even within altcoins, you can be at the like degen end of the pool.
Yeah.
You can, like
sometimes I look at Aaron's
blue chip alts.
If you're not the top 100, if you're not investing in the top 100 coins.
Yeah. Sometimes I look at Aaron's coins and I'm like, that is disgusting. You disgust me. You degenerate. Like, what is Zoin? And Aaron's like,
Zoin.
Yeah, Aaron.
We had a bad incident with Zoin earlier today, which is Zoin is one of my Cointopia coins, and I was confused
God,
it was sitting at the same price. Like while the entire market was like crashing and then rebounding, Zoin had just like stayed there like a stake in a raging river without moving a cent or an inch. And I was like, wait, is Zoin like even connected to the API of Blockfolio anymore? And I logged on to Cryptopia and Zoin said market paused on it, which I don't know what that means. It doesn't seem like a good thing.
Yeah, anything on Cryptopia is very questionable. I mean, it's more of a, I mean, people call it Shitopia for a reason.
Getting my nose, and pro gambler is turning up his nose at this.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Aaron, like that's like two degenerate gamblers are calling you a degenerate for your Zoin investment. You can take that however you want. Doug, one thing that Aaron and I were talking on before we had you was one of the things that people always like to dissect after these crashes is why it happened. And so I wanted to share with you and Aaron a theory that I read this morning, and I wanted to get both of your reactions to it.
Shoot.
And it's something, Doug, that you and I as Koreans, it's very close to our heart. This is in the Financial Times.
Sure.
In their Alphaville blog, which blogs quite a bit about cryptocurrency. Most of it not so positive, but a lot of it very smart and good.
Right.
I enjoy reading it. This is by Matthew C. Klein, and he is basically arguing that China and South Korea were concerned because North Korea was getting Bitcoin rich, right? That North Korea had clearly started Bitcoin mining operations. I think this is true. And I think that North Korea does have a sizable amount of Bitcoin. And they're saying, basically being like, we can't have North Korea be rich because if North Korea gets Bitcoin rich, then that's a problem for us. And so that this entire crash was done to make sure that North Korea's Bitcoin riches were cut in half. The sort of money graph, I think, out of this is that it's possible the recent price collapse below 10,000 per Bitcoin is part of a coordinated effort by regulators to apply unconventional pressure techniques on North Korean elites. If so, well done. Okay. What do you think about this theory?
I just want to understand this theory a little bit better. What's stopping the North Koreans from buying the dip?
More proof that Aaron might be more degenerate than the two degenerate Koreans is that, like, Aaron's first thought in terms of this geopolitical problem that is posed by the reputable Financial Times is that North Korea should just be TFD, baby.
Well, my other thought was just like, yeah, that does. The only part of the story that kind of adds up to me is like, basically, the best situation if you want to mine is like autocratic government, a bunch of like your own coal plants, limitless like factory warehouse space,
and no regulations.
It seems like a good place to mine.
I mean, one of the things that this article pointed out that was a fact that maybe North Korea wasn't doing this and didn't have that much Bitcoin was like, he was like, well, they don't have that much PC power. If you're like, you can bring the miners over from China, it's really not that hard. It's across one border.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I was thinking. Isn't there already like part of what Nathan Park said when he was on the show in the last episode was, well, why is China using Korea for its money laundering? It's like, it's close by.
They have
an existing trade, and it's easy to hide this stuff in existing trade. If you want to get some money out on an exchange and then bring it back into your country, you want to do it with someone with a bunch of loosely regulated trade. And as far as I know, China is basically North Korea's only trade partner.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, before I go into it, Doug, what do you think about this theory?
Well, I'm not sure about the China angle. I do think that like there might be a measure of that with the South Korean government because they are a little bit more hostile to North Korea than they are with China.
A little
that with China than North Korea.
Yeah,
just a tad. to me, I don't know. I'm hearing like a quadrillion different theories as to what's going on. I think I heard on Twitter just yesterday that some officials were essentially selling and buying the dip because they knew of this regulation news coming out and the timing of it, and were essentially using it for their own advantage. So there is a little bit of that. There's a little corruption in general in the Korean government.
They're coordinating with China intentionally crash the Bitcoin price so that North Korea stops being so rich.
But the price went right back up.
Yeah, look.
I think.
What do they think, that like North Korea is the ultimate panic seller?
Kim Jong Un has weak hands.
He'll fold in a second if we put any pressure on him.
Did you see that big volume under that? That was Kim Jong Un panic selling the bottom. All right, you know, like I just can't figure this theory out. Of all the theories that I read, which I will say that almost every single one of them I found to be highly unsatisfying and a bit ridiculous. This one, and look, I don't mean to bash the Financial Times. I think it's a wonderful paper. I think Alpha Bill is a good blog, but I just could not wrap my head around it. I just wanted to talk to you guys about it because I found it the most confounding, but also possibly the most interesting.
Also, can you see where nodes are in the Bitcoin network? Are there a bunch of nodes in North Korea? Okay.
Yeah.
What other coins are they into over there?
A lot of Monero.
Have these guys heard about Sumo or what?
It's tough to say because I don't know to what extent North Korea has access to these exchanges, what access it has to like actual fiat currency, like for their Bitcoin, because you know they're not paying for missiles and. Well, maybe they are. Maybe they're paying for missiles and whatever.
There might be the first Monero missile purchase. Yeah. The other thing is that if they don't have access to exchanges, then what? And all they're doing is mining it and keeping the mined coins. Like, why would it matter if the price went down? You know, they can't actually sell the bottom then.
Well, they probably have agents who can sell in other countries and exchanges. I mean, there is to give some credence to why this could be true.
Right, that strategy would only make...
Like, one reason it could be true is that generally countries that are trade isolated, that are subject to a huge blockade internationally, are hungry because of the import-export. They're hungry for other countries' currencies to buy stuff with. So if you had a bunch of Bitcoin and you were able to acquire local currencies and then bring them back into North Korea, that would be an advantage, but... I mean, like, what volume are we talking about here? Like that North Korea, like, yeah, how exactly. How did they crash the market?
I have no idea. I mean, can you really? I think that the theory is that they like were announcing that they're going to ban trading so that the market would tank, so that North Korea's economic power would go down. I also have a lot of problems with this.
That would only make sense if they were long-term trying to ban it altogether and kill Bitcoin itself. Like, otherwise, that strategy is just going to be a temporary dip.
Yeah.
Because, like, people would be like, oh, it's just like the last time you banned it. You didn't really ban it.
Yeah,
because
then Dan Bilzerian is going to BTFD and pop that thing right back up, you know? Like, there's just not that much. Also, can you buy a missile with Bitcoin, do you think?
Probably not with Bitcoin, but with Monero, I think it would be possible.
That makes no sense.
I mean, I do think that probably international arms traders are probably using crypto.
I think they are too. Yeah, I think you can buy it. I think you could probably buy a missile with Bitcoin. All right. Do we have anything else we want to talk with Doug about?
Okay, before we go, is there one project? I know that you had your initial set, which I copied directly from my own portfolio. Since then, now that we're past January 1st, is there anything that has newly excited you, or that you're like eager to add to your set of bags?
I'm invested in Storm and Block B now. I think those are good projects at the moment.
Block B. What's Block B?
The ticker symbol is BEE.
BEE. Strong ticker symbol.
BEE. Yeah, so what they're trying to do, I think, is build like a blockchain of things where, real-world items would be, represented by the blockchain.
Please, if you're listening to this, the last thing we want you to do is to go out and buy B or Storm. Doug, I'm going to admit something that I don't like to admit.
I'm just shamelessly shilling my bags right now.
I'm going to admit something that I don't like to admit, which is that I own a little bit of Storm, and I don't know what it is. Can you sure. please explain to me what I bought?
All right. So what Storm is they're trying to like gamify tasks.
Oh no.
And what that is like, I think.
I do? and to clarify, I did not buy this on a reputable exchange. I signed up for HitBTC, which I don't even know what that is, and bought it there. Okay.
We did a segment in the first show on Toshi, and isn't part of Toshi that like you do like tasks and somehow you like gain Ethereum through them, and then you like. Go from a serf to a merchant to a vassal lord.
I mean, yeah, the two sort of abiding ideas that are in the Ethereum sort of crypto world right now is that A, the blockchain can be used to sort thousands of tasks, right? And the second is that once we establish that we should do tasks through the blockchain, we should make it as much like a video game as possible. And that does sound like what this is like. But I honestly, Doug, this is not on you or anything like that, but I still have no idea what Storm does. Aaron, do you get it?
I get everything I need to get.
Yeah,
what does the logo look like? As much more.
Oh, it's
my
terrible.
Speed.
It's terrible. I was gonna actually bring up the logo later, but
it's like a lightning bolt.
Very bad. But the like when you explained what Waves was to us in one of our basement tapes, you being in the Waves Hall of Fame. I actually did understand what Waves was because you said that, like, hey, what Waves can do is it can create a platform. For example, it created a platform where you can buy a token to reserve office space in a WeWork-like setting. And I was like, that's an incredibly stupid idea that I don't understand why you'd ever need a token for, but okay. You know, I can envision the world.
Yeah,
I mean,
I get the idea, like, that there's a bunch of competing projects that allow you to issue and create your own token, and that, like, as with most things, like a, say, a self-publishing platform, the first wave of projects on it is going to be very, very hard to digest. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that self-publishing has like no merit as an idea. We were talking about issuing KangCoin on the Waves platform.
Oh, yeah, no,
right?
We are definitely going to do that in a later episode.
I feel like
watch out for KangCoin. KangCoin
should be like, you can exchange it for like sponsorship on the show, and Jay has to read whatever, like, it's like 10 KangCoin for an ad read.
No, Aaron, look.
You want to think bigger than that?
You're way. No, we're just going to print a bunch of words.
Oh, like, you're saying that my idea is too high concept.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's too clear. Like, all we'll do is we'll just say gamify, blockchain.
Gamify podcast sponsorship on the blockchain.
No, not even podcast. not even podcast sponsorship. We'll just say blockchain solutions to everyday problems. You know, a string of crypto language, and then we'll see if it takes off.
Okay, KenCoin coming soon. Doug, in addition to being a poker player, you are also an actor and have a show, as far as I understand, loosely based on your own life.
Yeah, it's loosely based on my real life. It's not exactly accurate.
What is the show is titled Just Doug?
Yeah, Just Doug. It's about my life as an Asian American actor in Los Angeles.
Who plays Jay in the show?
That'll be a later crypto episode. Busto and
Doug. this show has been has had a couple nice write ups in The Verge and in other entertainment tech sort of platforms. Where can people find it if they want to watch it?
Currently on Facebook Watch. It's on www.facebook.com/JustDougSeries. You can find it there, or just search Just Doug in your Facebook page.
Okay. Thanks for coming on, Doug.
Yeah, let's go. Let's talk soon, yeah? Cool. Later.
Yeah.
Thanks, Doug.
Yeah.
This episode of Coin Talk was taped Thursday, January 18th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Bitcoin price index was $11,888.
That was Coin Talk. You can reach us at hi@cointalk.show or on Twitter at @cointalkshow. Or on Instagram at @cointalkshow. We will get an episode out to you at least once a week, hopefully more than that, as soon as stuff is happening. I'm Aaron Lammer. My co-host is Jay Kang. Our partner is Medium, and we will see you soon.